session number 14788, Reel 5.
Mr. Parker, Reel 5. We're talking about your time in Egypt and when you've been training for Rhodes. Just before then, I forgot to mention, you'd got the new 25-pounders and the quads. What did you think of that? I mean, I know you weren't directly involved, but were you pleased to get them?
Well, I was pleased for the gunners, you know what I mean? Because he's got a few friends, in the gunnery section, and you're pleased that they're getting the proper equipment, and the quads were quite a good vehicle.
What was good about them? Well, how were they better? What did you have before, lorries or...?
We had lorries before, see, and of course, I mean, the quads were sort of, well, they were purpose-built for the job, and there was plenty of room inside for stacking kit, and I think the lads, they like them better, because they're sort of when you're going into battle to fight, I mean, you want something that you can be trusted in it. And I think before we were sort of, we didn't seem to be part of the army, sort of part of the unit. But with these quads, I mean, they were a powerful vehicle, and they could steam along, and the lads were quite happy.
Now, while you were training, you got this emergency mobilisation to go up to Tobruk. Did you know what was going on, or were you involved in that at all?
No.
Had you got just the same radios, or had you got any new radios, wirelesses?
No, I think as far as we were still on the old number ones.
Mm. And what do you remember? You don't remember much about the getting ready then, because they did it very quickly.
No.
What about the journey to Tobruk then? What do you remember of that? It's a long drive.
Any preparation night, I mean, you're going along, you don't know what's going to happen, how long it's going to take, and I mean, you got to get fed and watered and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
What do you remember of the journey? Anything?
No, not a lot.
Were you driving at all?
No.
So would you travel, did you have a special signal one, lorry?
Well, you got four or five signal lorries attached to the unit, but we just have to make do. I mean, if you was a linesman, then you go in the line truck, you see. But if you was say on a wireless set, then you'd be sitting in the truck where the wireless was.
And which were you at that time?
I think I might have been in the line section. Of course, that way you
was that the battery line section, 425 battery, or were you attached to a troop at this stage?
No, 425 battery. Yeah.
Not to A or B troop.
I was in A troop though. Yeah. Mm.
You were in A troop.
A troop. Yeah. Mm.
So.
And of course, you probably get four blokes on that. So I mean, you get a driver and his mate, and or they sort of could both drive, and you'd be in the back, just sort of making do. I mean, I can't remember much about it. Tobruk, Mesmer True. We come down on the canal, weren't we? On the canal. Mm.
So what about when you got to Tobruk? Though you were almost the last unit in from that side. You know, there's still some coming in from the other side.
Yeah.
And the Germans were meant to be around. Well, what do you remember about them that first? You know, when you got in.
It was Easter time, wasn't it? Easter, yeah. Well, I was the next truck to Peter Birkins, and we were in contact with him on the radio then, and he was saying, do so and so and so and so, passing orders, and just follow me, and all we were doing were following him. And he got the old flag up, that was it, like a standard bearer. You know, like you see these Americans with the old standard, that's how that was with that. He got a big flag and...
A Union Jack?
Yeah. He said, follow me, and we were following him. Didn't know who was going, but just following. Yeah.
That's actually inside Tobruk?
Inside Tobruk, yeah.
Do you remember, you stopped at Eagle Crossroads for a bit, I mean, and then there was a sandstorm. Do you remember any of that?
No, not really, no.
What about that? There were two big tank attacks, Good Friday and then Monday of Easter, you know. Do you remember either of them? There were more on 426, but I mean, you know, what were you doing during them, or what do you remember of them?
Well, I just remember that the tanks overrun both batteries, and they got past us. And eventually, I remember the next day, again I was with Peter, and there's a big valley on the sort of left hand side, and there was Slynn was my officer then, Captain Slynn, and he said, tonight we're going to get out of here and go back and rejoin all the rest of the troops. And that there were, I remember the sniper fire right across the valley, and we made a run for it, and he said to me, get your head down, because you'd probably get this sniper fire. I said, but use my roll. He got a big roll for his bedding, and I always remember I was at the back of that, so that, well, any bullets, they've got to come through that lot before they come to me, and I was right down on the floor of the wagon.
And what was Slynn and Pip Birkin doing? Just doing a reconnaissance?
Yeah.
And you'd have your wireless with you, would you?
Yeah. Well, we had the wireless. Same as that might be there. And you go, hey, I got down on the floor of the wagon, and I got the bedroll back of me. And that was we were going that way. And they were firing right across the valley on the sniper fire.
Rifle fire?
Yeah. Well, it might have been like our bread and fire. I mean, it might have their, what they call them, but it's similar to our wren. I mean, and they got tracers in the night, so you could see them coming towards you. Yeah. Again, it was like a Guy Fawkes night. I mean, it was sort of going down to bonfire night. It's sort of to me anyway, because I mean, I was only 20-odd, and I didn't think about getting killed. I mean, never thought about it. Thought, well, that's it. It's funny, I mean, even now, I mean, I sit there and I think, well, I could have been killed first day, but, you know.
So that was, you didn't actually see the tanks then, during that tank fighting?
No.
And would you have laid a line out, or were you just acting as a sort of signal as a Birkin?
Well, he'd got different sort of code for your officers and for your you got your GPO, and of course GPO act and all those kind of things. So you'd have a line to so and so. It's hard to describe it, because
would you lay the lines?
Oh no, you got proper people to do the line, people, you know. What they call linesmen, they would do the line.
And would they maintain it as well?
Oh, they maintain that, yeah.
So you were more at this stage acting as a radio, a wireless operator.
That's right, yeah. It was later on when we'd sort of made a stand, and when we were sort of, you know, attacking them, that we went on the linesmen. We had a line from the OP to the guns. We used to have to maintain that, because that's when the Aussies came into the poles. Yeah. I mean, they were queer people, they were.
The poles?
Poles.
Well,
yeah.
That's quite late in the siege, so I'll come back to that.
Oh, yeah.
So during the early period, you know, the first week or so.
Well, it was a bit chaotic, I mean, because nobody knew what was happening. I mean, people said, oh, the tanks have overrun so and so, so. And there's Palestrina, is that mentioned in there?
You were near Palestrina, yeah.
Yeah. For Palestrina, yeah.
So you were just driving around with Birkin. What was he like in the truck? Or were you with Slynn?
I was Slynn, yeah.
Slynn's truck.
Yeah.
What was he like to work with? He's obviously fairly considerate. If you.
Oh, yeah. Well, provided he did his job and, you know, did it properly, I mean, he wouldn't worry, you know. I mean, Slynn was quite an affable chap. I mean, I always got on with him. because he was a rugby man, you see, and I was playing rugby with him.
So that's all you remember about the early fighting then?
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm.
Now when they settled down into the siege, they started up with Stuka raids. Do you remember?
Oh, bloody hell, Stuka.
Well, were you ever there when there's a Stuka?
I mean, yeah.
What was this? I mean, you told me about the high level stuff. So what was
Stukas?
What was this low level Stukas diving?
Frightening to death.
Was it worse than the high level stuff?
Oh yes. With the high level, I mean, there was a rumble and that was it. I mean, they were coming. You knew that. But Stukas, I mean, it was the actual noise of it. And I always remember one bloke. Oh, he's dead again. He made a little dugout and he said, he was sort of, come on, get me if you can. Yeah, it was sort of miming to the old planes and they were coming down. And the screech they made when they came down before they dropped the bombs was terrible. I mean, that's enough to frighten anybody.
It worked then?
Oh, terrible. Yeah. I think if you... if you kept thinking about it, I mean, you know, I'll tell you a little story. A pal of mine, now he's dead again, but Cheddar Turner, I mean, you've probably come across his name two or three times, because Cheddar and Ernie Roy and myself and Paddy Miles, we were all sort of flaggers, we were all sort of mates. And he was always wanting to make a nice bed for himself. I mean, I would pull my blanket on the floor, pull it over, and that was me. I was in bed, but not Cheddar. He wanted to put a dugout, and he wanted a pillow, and we used to have his blankets in this order, in that order. And he said to me, he said, I'm going down to HQ for 2 days. He said, do you want to stay in my bed? I said, no, I'll sleep on the deck. So he said, it's lovely. He said, come and have a look at it. They went down. It was nice, and it made a little dugout, and everything was sort of mud cons, and his bed was nice. And I said, I'd suffer with claustrophobia now, so I'll sleep in there. He said, well, you can have it if you want. Just now, nah, so I'll sleep on the deck. And the next day, it had a direct hit, still with a dive bomber. So I thought, well, that's luck, isn't it? Or it's fate. And, when the old Stukas came, I think one of the Aussies commanders, he said that you can tell the time of the day by the time the Stukas come down, because he come down at a certain time each day and people were scared to death. I was more than scared. I think if people you know, weren't loose before, they'd be loose after Stuka raid. Yeah.
What about the chap who was gesturing them? What happened to him?
Well, that one, and he swore blindly that they dropped a bomb and they were coming straight for him. And the plane seemed to be, you know, he'd seen it so far up, and then it seemed to come straight. And he went, oh! I said, it's all right, it's gone. And he thought it was coming straight for him. He imagined that the bloke had heard him.
Had seen him.
Coming straight for him. And it appeared to be, you know, sort of, you could actually, when they got low, you could see the bloke in the watch chain with the machine gun. He almost waved to him and shake his hand. And of course, when he's come out to the dive, they come up, that's when you could see them really, you know, close to.
Now, how did you stand? You say you were very scared.
Yeah.
But how did you keep going, or? Did you get used to it?
Well, you just laugh it off. I mean, it's one of those things that you think, well, you can't know much about it, so, you know, why worry?
Was everybody like that, or did some lose their nerve?
Well, I suppose, like in wartime or in peacetime, there's always someone that's brave and someone who's not so brave, you know.
Well, did you get much shell fire on your positions?
Oh, yes, all the time. In a shorter shell fire, I mean,
Was that not as bad as the Stukas, though?
You see, again, you come back to the position of a gunner and a signaller. A signaller can be anywhere, you see. He's all over the place. Whereas a gunner, he's got to be there. He's on his gun, isn't he? So if a bloke's going to fire at you, he knows you're there, so he keeps plonking it and you can't get away from it. But a signaller could be anywhere. Could be in his, what they call a sus hole, you know.
What's that?
He'd build himself a hole and brick it up, and that'd be like his sus hole. When they started shelling, he'd go in there, you see, out of the way. He might be just resting, or he might be have a shift on the wireless, might have a shift on the line.
That's what you'd be doing, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you mend the line? How did you go about it? I mean, when you got...
You had tape and pliers.
How would you find the break, first of all?
Well, you knew, because they couldn't hear that end or that end. So, I mean, you have to go up the wire until you find the break. It sometimes take you an hour, sometimes half an hour, sometimes 5 minutes. And at one point, the others were in Tobruk. And when they broke camp and had to go to various places, they used to cut the wire and cut a piece out to tie the bedding up with. So you go along and find that you got four or five metres of line missing.
What would you do then?
Well, you tell the others about it, and they'd say, "Well, man, it was on a line about the desert," and they said, "Just..." And eventually, I mean, we had this sus hole business. We dug a place out and made it like a little caravan type of thing, you know, at Cologne. We get in there and get some date boards, and there's about six of us. You said three go that side and three, because don't forget the OP and the gun position is about 4 or 5 miles away, so you got to keep. And every day you went down the line, just checking that.
So this sus hole would be halfway down the line.
That's right, yeah.
And you just check the lines. Wait, and you were saying how would you repair it when you found it?
Well, you got tape and pliers and
just twisted it together, yeah. And then taped it.
Just taped it, yeah.
So you'd do that, and then the other times you'd be on the wireless.
Yeah.
Any other jobs as signaller?
Not really, no.
Would you ever go to the OP and run the wireless or telephone up there?
Oh, yes. You had a stint on the gun position and a stint on the OP.
What was it like up at the OP?
Well, that's where we set up those poles.
Did you ever go up them?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
which officer would you be on with?
Well, anybody that was in, you know, at the time, because, I mean... They had stints, probably 2 days, and sort of swapping about, so they weren't sort of getting, you know, too much of one thing or the other.
So who do you remember being up there with?
Oh.
No one in particular?
Not really, no.
And what would your duties be up there then? What would happen?
Well, when you set up this pole, we used to have a panorama in front of it. And you used to have all your things marked off, like H4, H6, H7. And when the ITARs, you could pinpoint, say, with the ITARs were going for food or going for toilet, and you put a random or something just to keep them on the toes.
Would you actually be allowed to fire? Or would you have to get the officer or the ACT to do it? The OP ACT.
The OPEC, we were doing the OPEC job there.
So you knew the gun. Did you remember the fire?
Oh, I'd say tape post and yeah.
What was it? Do you remember the rest of it?
Well, you say tape post, one round gunfire, HE5, and then they'd have the same panorama as you at the other end, and they'd look on there, and that would give them the gun angle. See. They'd say less 2 degrees or right 2 degrees or, you know, four, right 2 degrees, left 2 degrees. And they got a picture, same as you, like a camera picture. But same as say, not being a gunner, I mean, I didn't know.
Could you actually range, I mean, you know, bracketing and the bracketers, and would you know how to do that, or would that you leave that to the officers?
Oh, the officer did that, yeah.
So you'd just be allowed to fire at a set target, yeah. Or just near a set. Did you get much fire when you were at the OP? Enemy fire on you?
Well, this thing you sat in...
What was it like? It
was like a cradle, and on the outside you got steel about as thick as that.
Half an inch.
So they could then just sort of rifle fire or, you know, sort of machine gun fire. That would just sort of on the side. I mean, it wouldn't penetrate. It was too far away. So you never get any sort of heavy stuff.
And how high were the poles?
Well, later on they had massive poles, you know, it was all sky high. But the ones we were in was, I think, you know, like a lamppost, a little bit higher than that. And he went up and just sat inside and had your panorama in front of him.
Did you enjoy it?
Not very. It was you just imagine getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning before it got, you know, sort of really hot, and sitting there all day, you know.
So it was boring.
A bit boring. Oh.
Any other jobs as a signaller?
Not normal. No.
Did you ever go into no man's land with officers on patrols with the Australians or anything?
Oh no, no.
Now, I believe that you used to have to do some gunnery work as well, even though you were a signaller. Could you tell me how that came about? Because that's not usual, is it?
Oh, no, no. We used to get sometimes a week's rations. We used to have to go down to the gun position to collect it. Well, by that time, we'd all learnt to drive, and with no licences. Because in the desert, you don't need a licence. And we used to come down and say, well, who's going to take the wagon now? So, oh, so-and-so, I'll come down with you. Okay. There might be four of you go down.
This is from your little sus hole,
yeah.
Halfway down the line.
Yeah. And when we used to come down near the gun post, we used to start, you know, sort of shouting and doing sort of... A lot of people were in the Boy Scouts, so they knew this sort of... they used to go, "In gun jumper, gun jumper in yaboo, yaboo. Yeah, boo, in baboo. Yeah, boo, boo, boo." And of course, imagine four blokes coming almost naked, coming down in a wagon, and come across the gun post, and Willie Pingle's there, probably trying to direct operation. And he stopped us one day and said, "Where's your blokes been?" I said, "Well, we're flaggers up the line." So he said, "Well, what are you doing down here?" So I said, "Oh, we've come to collect rations." He said, "Your blokes want a bit of discipline," he said, coming down across the gun back position like that. I said, "What's your name?" I said, "Parker." "Oh," he said, "I've come across you at Dragby, didn't I?" I said, "Yes, sir." "Oh," I said, well, put a stop to your capers," he said, "at least you and I." He said, "I'll put you on Mr. Flinty's gun," that's Sergeant Flint. And he said, "Well, fair enough." I said, "But you better see my officer, so see what he thinks about it." He said, "Well, I'll see him." He said, "But anyway," he said, "for now," I said, "you're on that gun." And funnily enough, I was on Pete Westlake, was the bombardier on that gun.
That we called Charles, but
Charles,
Pete
yeah,
was dead.
Yeah, Charles. And he was the bombardier on that gun. And there again, it was a section that... One bloke was one of those blokes could go out in the desert and find anything. He'd find tins of bully beef. The Australians was throwing stuff away, burying it because they got too much of it. We hadn't got any at all. And he used to find all kinds of things, come back with tins of fruit, and found an old motorbike. He was a motor mechanic by trade. He came back with that, and he was sort of like a done on his own rights. He's dead now.
And what about the actual gun drill? What do you remember of it? How did you take to it? You've not done it before, had you?
No.
So what did you think of £25 a gun drill?
Well, I didn't mind it. It was a change, and I thought, well, if I've got to do it, I mean, I might as well buckle down and learn all about it.
So you're actually living on the gun position. I mean, he actually kept you there, did he?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For how long?
Oh, about 2 months. Yeah. I was really one of the boys then. Yeah, so E-man sort of thing. And I remember Charles, he was a bombardier. Well, he was like number three. And he was the layer. And I was the sort of loader. And you had to learn the trail, like, and all kinds of things like that.
What do you mean, sorry? The trail?
How well, on a £25, you had, well, they say on a trail, because you had like a, at the end of the trail itself, which the cradle for the gun, there's like a hole where you put a big rod in to move the gun backwards and forwards. And underneath the gun itself, you had a platform, which when you got tank action, you just have to drop that onto the ground for stability, so the gun would, when you're firing on tanks, you could run it round this trail. You've probably seen the photographs of you. And I was number four, which meant I was the I was loading. And there's your man on his seat. There's number three, and I was number four, and they got your number one at the back, who's a sergeant.
What did the two do then?
Two. He's on that side of the gun.
The right hand side.
The right hand side. On the left hand side, you've got number three on his seat and number four just in front of him. And he's doing the loading. And you get a bloke to ram the shell, of course. I'm not quite, not being the gun, I'm not quite.
It's alright, you're doing fine, yeah. Sounds right.
He got your number one doing the trail business, and the number three, he's doing the side. And it's a queer thing to explain if you're not sort of up with it. I mean, people say, what do you mean by a side, or what do you mean by a trail? But, I mean, in your mind's eye, you can see this happening on the floor, and you get a bloke says, right 4 degrees. Well, what normally happens when you've got to move that gun through right 4 degrees down, how do you do it? Well, the way you do it is that you look through the sight like that, and when the gun's like in a position along the floor, now you can see through, say I'm looking like that through the sight, and I can see that mug. Now if I move the gun that way, now when I look through it, I can't see the mug. Now you're with me? So you've got to traverse this till you can see that, and then you're actually lined up for firing. Because if you move a gun and you've been firing that way, you'd be firing that way, wouldn't you? Unless you come back onto the. It's difficult. So that's what you do now. Now the gun's firing over there. See, now if you get left 4 degrees, you move the gun that way, but the sight, you can't see that mug. So you've got to do this, adjust this till you see that mug, then you're actually firing on that 4 degrees. But the number three bloke is probably, well, the best bloke on the job. I mean, he's the most intelligent bloke. That's why probably Charles got the job, you see.
And what was Charles, Peter, West, whichever, what was Westlake like then?
He was all right. Not too bad. I mean, as I say, you've got to have sort of probably a year with a bloke to find out actually what he's like. I mean, but to me, I mean, I always got on well with him.
What about your number one was Flint.
Flint, he got killed. One of the best.
In what way? What was good about him?
Well, he was a young bloke, but he got an old head on young shoulders. You know, he sort of he knew his job, and he looked like a soldier. I don't think anybody got a bad word to say about Flinty.